This is Interview, an inside look at the people whose music has changed our lives. Interview is brought to you by Elektra Asylum Records. We'll be back with host Jim Ladd and Interview right after this.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Jim Ladd. And tonight, part one of a two-part interview of the band. Now, this is going to be a rather unique show tonight for a couple of reasons. Number one is that tonight's show, featuring Robbie Robertson with guest appearances by both Rick Danko and Richard Manuel, was taped just prior to their historic Last Waltz concert in San Francisco. I met all three of these gentlemen in Malibu at the recording studio called Shangri-La, an experience I will not soon forget.
I don't understand, Jim.
You don't understand the question?
I don't understand. I mean, this isn't the first time that we've ever done this. I really don't understand, you know.
This isn't the first time we've ever done it, although it seems like it.
No, that was a good question.
No, he's not here.
What was that question again?
Are we doomed?
What do you suggest we do? Pray?
That was the day that, for some mysterious reason, we just kept going around in circles and laughed a whole lot. Then, about a week later, I taped another session with Robbie Robertson alone. So tonight, part one, before the Last Waltz. Next week, part two with Rick Danko, and a look back at one of music's most original and skilled musical combinations, the band. Ever since they formed their first association in 1959, in Canada as the Hawks, rock reviewers have been trying to pin labels on the band. But Robbie Robertson, who has always written most of their music, doesn't understand any of those labels.
When we decided we were going to make an album, we didn't know whether it was going to be a Tops and Pops 40, a cult album. We didn't know where we belonged and who we were. All we knew is that's what we did. We would read in the paper and we were folk rock. We said, isn't that amazing? All these years we've been playing together and here we are, we're folk rock. And we haven't heard three folk songs in our whole life. And then we went along a little while longer and we were on the cover of Time magazine and it said that the new sound was country rock. You know, and then we said, do you believe that? And before long, our background, our whole background was R&B. We didn't know that this was going to turn out to be hip music or We could have been doing the summer spot for Tony Orlando and Don, for all we knew about it, is what I'm saying. You know, we could have ended up anywhere, you know?
Robbie Robertson credits any real influence on his music, it is the American Southland. Our interview of the band continues with his awakening in the birthplace of rock and roll.
When you're there, and when I first went there from Canada, I mean, I could have just as easily have gone to Saturn. You know, it was that extreme for me. I just walked around with my mouth open. I couldn't believe it, but I did. In the first couple of days that I was there, I did hear something in the air at night that I never heard before in my life. I heard a rhythm, kind of harmonica sounding thing. I don't know if it was equivalent to crickets and whatnot. I heard a thing down there that where it made me think there was almost, that music was in automatic down there.
Virgil Caine is a name and I served on the Danville train. Stoneman's cavalry came and pulled up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May the 10th, Richmond had fell. It's a time I remember oh so well. The night they drove on Dixie down.
when we would play, it was such a mixture of ages. Everybody felt the same way about the music. And I thought, you know, this is really incredible. I mean, this is another world, you know, no question about it. You know, this world down here is not trying to live up to some sophistication that came over from Europe or sometime. They came straight from there into the jungle, and they stripped down all of that nonsense. And on one hand, you know, we're in this country and where we're trying to educate ourselves and everything, a lot of people find it, you know, a little too funky, you know. But at the same time, it's fascinating, and that's why there's been, you know, so much music come out of there, so much music written about there. The names of the towns, the names of the rivers, everything has a much more musical ring to it.
When I get off of this mountain, you know where I want to go. Straight down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico. The Lake Charles, Louisiana. Little Bessie girl I once knew, and she told me just to come on by if there's anything that she could do. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She mends me, I don't have to speak. And she defends me a drunkard's dream if I ever did see. She bet on one horse to win, and I bet on another to show. The odds were in my favor, I had them 5-1. And that nag to win came around the track, sure enough we had won. Up on Cripple Creek, and she sends me in my spring a leap. She mends me, I don't have the speed. She defends me a drunkard's dream if I ever did see one. I took up all of my winnings and I gave my little Bessie half. And she tore it up and threw it in my face just for a laugh. Now there's one thing in the whole wide world I sure would like to see. That's when that
I'm Jim Ladd, and we'll find out more about the band next when Interview continues. All but one member of the band hail from Canada. Levon Helm is the American. I'm Jim Ladd back with you, and our interview of the band continues now with Robbie Robertson's thumbnail sketch of the Others.
I mean, I can give you a little bit of brief background, but I really can't explain them as people, right. You know, that Rick is from the Tobacco Belt in Canada. It's a place beside the Six Nation Indian Reservation on Lake Erie. He comes from one of those families, you know, where the brother played mandolin and the father played fiddle and the cousin played this. Everybody played something all of his life. And for him to go into music was about as natural a transition as, you know, a little boy learning to run. And he was playing in that area when we first saw him in 1960. And when we, all of us on different levels, when we joined the band, I mean, that was like not just joining the band, it was like going to school as well. That's where we got the other half of our education. Uh-huh. Richard comes from Stratford, which is where the Stratford Shakespearean Festival is held every year. It's in Ontario. He was one of those kids growing up. Everything was going along quite normally, and all of a sudden he heard rock and roll on the radio, and that was it.
Goodbye.
He had his calling. You know, it was one of those things. He was just immediately a fool for it. He just loved it.
The many roads I've covered. We've got
Garth was the only one in the band who really had musical training, and lots of it. And he was an intellectual, musicologist, competent on several instruments, and kind of in his neck of the woods, kind of a little legend already. I mean, he was very young and he was phenomenal. He had such seasoning and such background already that it was amazing to us. We couldn't even comprehend his musicianship. And he was brought into the band as the keyboard or organ player and teacher. Levon is the only one who's not a Canadian. He's not only not a Canadian, but he's, from where he comes from, it's almost, if there was an opposite to being a Canadian, where he's from would be the opposite. So he comes from this area in southeast Arkansas, and within a 100-mile radius of there is also the same place that Elvis Presley, Muddy Waters, Bo Diddley, Jimmy Reed, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, Conway Twitty, all of those people came from like a little area down there. This, to me, was the birth of rock and roll.
But how do the other members of the band see Robbie Robertson? Well, for that piece of information, we'll have to dip into the insanity of our first group encounter with the others to find out.
What is the worst thing about Robbie Robertson in your life, having to deal with the Cat Daly?
No, that's unfair question.
Of course.
Unfair question.
Of course.
But the worst thing about Robbie, man, he uses Banaka.
Really?
Whenever we get close, you know, I always have to back off just a little, man, because of the Banaka. Only uses Banaka when
he's... not talking about me. He's talking about the other Robbie Robertson.
Oh,
the one that just sold his house down on the old Fox Road down there.
Oh, my God.
He just had a heart transplant.
Was it yours?
Is this the way this interview has been going?
The whole time,
man. Go out yonder, peace in the valley. Come downtown, have to rumble in the alley. Oh, you don't know the shape I'm in. Has anybody seen my lady? This living alone would drive me crazy.
Well, that day, you know, I think that we were all just feeling, you know, a certain kind of way, and one thing just led to another, and it was just basically, you know, harmless fun. And I think that that's acknowledged in the band. There are no real wackos in the band. Nobody is really in that place, and we're not a bunch of goofy kids, you know, smashing windows in hotels, and you know what I mean? We actually grew out of that. I mean, everybody likes to have a laugh. You know, and everybody's certainly up for looking at the remote ends of life, but it's, you know, it's not that way that you might have observed that day, that I'm kind of sensible and they were crazy. It's not necessarily that way at all.
You can walk on the water, drown in the sand. You can fly off a mountain top, anybody can. Run away,
run away,
run away, run away. It's the restless age. Look away,
look away,
look away,
look away.
You can turn the page. Chinks
in the third degree. Trying to deal with people you can't see. Take away. This house of mirrors. Give away. All the souvenirs. We're all in the same boat. Ready to go on the end of the world. Flat old world. The street is a sideshow from the past.
We had settled into a thing in life. It was very carefree. We could go here, go there, play anywhere, the worst joint you could imagine. I mean, we played at Jack Ruby's club in Fort Worth, Texas, where the roof had been blown off the place a couple of times. You know, to playing the Hollywood Bowl with Bob Dylan. There wasn't very much at the time that jolted us. You know, we could go from here to there and nothing really mattered. It was just a matter of playing really good and having a good time.
Hey buddy, would you like to buy a watch real cheap? Here on the street. I got six on each arm. Two on my feet. Life is a carnival. Believe it or not.
All the shuck and jive aside, their music reflects 15 years of experience together that began in Canada. I'm Jim Ladd, and we'll be back with Robbie Robertson's cross-cultural perspective next, when our interview of the band continues.
Acadian driftwood, gypsy tail.
With Canada as a homeland, you would expect the band to have a slightly different view of things.
It's a neutral country. I mean, they don't have really a lot of, unpleasant relationships with the rest of the world. Like, we have no bones to pick with anybody. That's where the draft dodgers could go there, you know. They didn't have to go to Algeria or somewhere. You go to Canada and some people, I don't think, could accept the pressure of fighting it and going through the thing, you know, and so to go to Canada was a way of dealing with it without running to the other side of the world where they could go and they could live a life similar to their upbringing and they could exist. And there was enough people up there who shared the experience that that they had a society and they weren't alone.
Over by the wildwood, hot summer night, we lay in the tall grass till the morning light. If I had my way, I'd never get the urge to roam. But a young man serves his country and an old man guards the home. Don't send
at the point where we're in between, and it's confusing. You know, it's confusing for us because we say, that's ridiculous, going and killing people. But in the meantime, there's people that want to kill and want to be killed, you know, and where they can release that energy, you know, is a problem, because you don't want them releasing it over at the drugstore over here, you
know?
Not
on me, anyway.
You're right. I mean, just to walk out of the place, and here's this guy who didn't get to go to the war, and he's got this thing in his gut, you know, and he's got to do something about it. I think the Army is very useful for that. I think there should be a place for somebody to go to release that besides out in the back alley or wherever else.
So you believe there's like a use for the Army?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's always been an Army in Canada, but being in the Army in Canada is like a job. You get up in the morning and you go to the Army and you come home at night and, you know.
That's it.
And you're not in the Army anymore. But I do think that war and armies and whatnot are a definite outlet for male human nature element. I mean, I think there's a thing there that's just in our instincts, whatever, that we have a thing that we have to get off. It's better off that there is an outlet for that. But the thing is that in this generation, I don't think that it's as common. I don't think as many people feel that way. They either have found other outlets, they draw, or they're, you know, writers, or they do something that enables them to get that off their back.
Ring your bell, change your number, run like hell, you can't hide from thunder. Ring your bell, get in the wind, you and me gonna make some medicine.
I think that history tells us that it's there to begin with. And it's just getting to the point in the last, you know, few years where we're really starting to cope with it at all. You know, where people are saying, you know, I don't feel that way. I don't feel like I have to kill somebody or fight somebody, or, you know, that I'm going to feel much better after I get that done with.
Smoky bars and souped up cars, where we drowned all sorrow. Renegade.
Robbie Robertson doesn't think of himself as any kind of spokesman, only a maker of music, and our interview of the band continues.
I think some people in music assume that responsibility. I think they really feel like, I have a voice here and people are listening to it. It's my responsibility, you know, to pass on something that's valid, not some silly garbage. And I don't think many of us in this business are equipped, because just a couple of years before we came along, the people that were doing basically what we're doing, you know, was Bo Diddley and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis. And I don't think that that was their job either.
I ain't got no I'm a lonely boy.
I wasn't listening to Jerry Lee Lewis and Bo Diddley to find out, you know, the inner truths of life or anything like that. You know, I was listening to it because, if anything, it was a departure from that for me. It was another raw side of life, street side of life that I really appreciated, and it made me feel good. But it had nothing to do with any kind of intellectual exercise or, you know, I mean, we're just in an age where we've got all the gurus coming out of the wall and everybody knows something that somebody else doesn't. And that's fine, because a lot of people really need help, really want help, and it's great that there's somebody there, you know, to turn to. But I'm a little bit leery of most people that, you know, doing what we do, you know, that play music, that really assume that responsibility. And I think that the job is to observe the situation, you know, and in such a way that it makes something more interesting, a little clearer, another way of looking at it, something that you can relate to, you know, at this particular time in the way that it all goes around. That really seems like what it is to me. I've never listened to a record or a song in my life and thought, my goodness, you know, that's where it's at. That's what it's all about, you know? That's never happened to me. It doesn't affect me that way. Either I like the song and the music or I don't. And I don't particularly care if it teaches me about life.
But the band first became internationally known as the backup for a man whose music does make statements.
Bob Dylan. I know that no one's ever asked you about either one of you. Bob Dylan, right?
I'm Bob, he's Dylan.
You're Bob and he's Dylan.
Cut.
I'm Jim Ladd, and we'll get into their association with Bob and with Dylan next when our interview of the band continues. The professional association of the band and Bob Dylan began in 1966 when Dylan phoned Robbie Robertson and asked him and Levon to play a couple of concerts as backup. That year, the rest of the then-called Hawks packed up and joined Dylan for his world tour. They all moved to Woodstock, New York, after Dylan's motorcycle accident. And while he was healing, the Hawks began writing songs for their first album, Music from Big Pink. It was released in 1968, 2 years later, and they were then the band. I'm Jim Ladd, and our interview of the band continues now with Robbie Robertson remembering.
Yeah, we weren't aware of that at the time. I mean, just because we were living it, we weren't observing it from a distance. So it wasn't really anything for us at all. But when we were asked about it, it was confusing. You know, just some of them say, well, you were Bob Dylan's band. How does it feel now to be out on your own? You don't understand, you know, I mean, we just had something in common and we accidentally got together and played together, you know, for a while, and we still do occasionally and everything, but, you know, that's really the extent of it, you know. It's not a matter of anything, you know, like what it would seem, I guess, because Bob Dylan, you know, was doing his thing, you know, towards a huge press media and everything, and we were doing our thing in the back streets.
No way out my window. Leave at your own chosen speed. I'm not the one you want, babe. I'm not the one you need. You say you're looking for some love. Never weep with a real storm. To protect you and defend.
It was a hard bridge for us to cross.
Why?
To go from being obscure musicians that just did what we did to the best of our ability. It's a very straight ahead, honest thing. Into something that left a lot of room to play pretending games of to pretend that we were like this or like that or some kind of a riff and that we were part of this and that this was a hip thing. It really didn't exist for us, and we were, you know, we spoke about it a little bit the other day when we talked, you know, but we were really kind of tossed from here to there, you know. And when people would talk about it, I mean, all you would realize is, gee, it's got nothing to do with us. I mean, we become kind of a victim of this situation, you know, and whatever anybody chooses to say, that's the way it's received, you know. And when it's not necessarily got anything to do with anything, you know, and that whole thing just, it avalanched on us, you know, to a point where there was such a mystique put on the whole thing, and there was such an emphasis, and it ended up spooking us out. It ended up bothering. I mean, we made Big Pink, and we didn't play a job until after we had cut our second album. You know, so the whole thing just got meshed into a thing that we couldn't cope with, that we couldn't abide by, that we couldn't live by, and at the same time, nobody wanted to stand up and say, "Wait a minute. You got me all wrong here." You know, that's not the way it is at all. I mean, that was useless. We could see that was a waste of time, and it was useless. And if we were going to get anything across at all, the vehicle we had to do it in was, you know, by making some more music. And that's when we made Stage Fright.
Now deep in the heart of a lonely kid, he's suffering so much for what he did. They gave this bubble fortune and fame. Since that day he ain't been the same. See the man with the stage fright, just standing up there to give it all his might. And he got caught in the spotlight. But when we get to the end, he wants to start all.
Get the same intensity of a rush from creating music or performing it that you used to have when you first started?
There's some mystery that's missing now because I've experienced certain things, but I think the basic element of, you know, achieving a particular thing or going in front of a lot of people, I don't know if you ever really get next to that, or I don't know if I'll ever really get next to taking that for granted or anything. I still get very nervous from it, and I still, you know, have to prepare myself mentally to do it.
Your brow is sweating and your mouth gets dry. Fancy people go drifting by. Moment of truth is right at hand. Just one more nightmare you can stand.
I think that if you still like it, you know, you have to end up doing something because of it. Either some kind of preparation, or it has some kind of a toll on you, you know. I can't imagine anybody really taking it for granted, you know, and just yawning and saying, one more concert, I've done many of them, you know, it's just as meaningless as all the rest. I don't know, when there's people out there, it's hard to accept it like that. I hope it's meaningful, and I hope that it's, you know, it has lasting power. I hope it's not just some we're making just some silly little songs that, you know, in 5 years from now or 10 years from now or whenever from now will be, you know, just silly little songs that you remember from your childhood. You know, we mean to do more than that in it.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said. When I saw Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey, Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around. Take a load off. Moses, there's nothing you can say. It's just old Luke, and Luke's waiting on the judgment day. Well, Luke, my friend, what about young Annalee? He said, do me a favor, son, won't you stay and keep Annalee company? Take a load off.
Nowhere.
Theirs is a legacy that stretches over 16 years and includes songs that have become American music standards. They defy all of the labels that people have attempted to apply to their music, and it's probably visionary wisdom that prompted these five musicians to call themselves simply The Band. And as we discovered in our first insane encounter with them in their converted Los Angeles bordello named Shangri-La, they're all alive with a sense of humor.
When is the next Band album due? How's that?
It's going to be called The Second Best of The Band.
Just another cheap capitalistic ripoff to get, you know, another reissue of the...
No, it's going to be the same album.
Same, exactly. Different package. Now, we've asked you some intelligent questions here. We've given you the space to spill your guts on the radio.
Rewind the tape.
Now, what is that?
You rewind the tape and you listen to your questions, and then you turn and look me in the eye and tell me that.
I mean, this is entertaining.
Let's rewind the tape and listen to it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed tonight's interview of The Band. I do want to thank Robbie Robertson, Rick Danko, and Richard Manuel for both of these encounters. Now, next week, we'll be bringing you part two of our interview of The Band featuring Rick Danko. Before saying goodnight, I do want to thank Larry Samuels for all his help. Also, special thanks to Ellen White and Patty Wright. You heard me correctly. Ellen White and Patty Wright, both of Arista Records. And my personal thanks go out to my partner, Jack Morris. Also, thank you to Robbie Carroll and Lindsay Guerrero of Interview Incorporated. Now, I hope you'll join us next week, same time, same frequency, for part two of our interview of The Band. I'm Jim Ladd.
This has been another interview brought to you by Elektra Asylum Records. Interview was produced by Bill Levy, written by Jim Ladd, and engineered by George Chirujas, with special thanks to George Steele. Interview, another new concept in radio.